Good afternoon and welcome to the Island County Roundtable for February 25th, 2025. It's 2:15, and I want to thank all of the people who are here today. Most of our elected officials are here. Most of our department heads are here. Unfortunately, Commissioner Jill Johnson can't be here this afternoon, but I'm really grateful for everybody who is. We're talking about something that's really important to everyone, and that's the travel and training budget and some other items. But that's the one that's got people a little bit head up. So the issue was that the county commissioners made a choice during budget last year to bring some of the budget items that departments consistently fail to spend to the max, to what they budget for. Generally, for example, the training budget at Island County, people on an average departments and offices spend about 60% of what they put in for their training. And we, the commissioners, needed to find places where there was money, you know, on the table that wasn't being spent, because we had to come up with the cash in order to give the increases to the non-represented employees, to give a wage increase last year. And so we felt that this was a good way to do that. So what we did was we budgeted for you to have access to all the money that you had budgeted for, but we would just put it through a communal pot. And so if you actually were going to spend all of the money that you had budgeted for, which we doubted that it would happen, but some departments might have, so you would have that option. But we would be tracking where our training dollars were going. Same thing with we're talking about supplies and travel dollars. Same thing with travel dollars. So there was a concern that the commissioners, in making this decision, had overstepped their authority with regard to the autonomy of elected officials, and that's where elected officials became unhappy about that. So what I'd like to do to start off, though, is to turn this over to Susan Geiger, who can talk more detail about numbers, and then we'll pass around this flow chart, and you can see for 24, 23, 22, I think back to whatever, 2019 or something, you can see how much money you budgeted for these things and how much you actually spent. And you'll understand where the commissioners, I hope you'll understand where the commissioners were coming from when we made that decision. Did you have anything to add, Janet?
The two sheets I'm going to pass around, and I will put these in PDF form and email them to all of you. We had to paste this together because it's such a big data set. We have the travel and training expenses on these two pages by department and then also by fund. So you can see how we're spending our travel and training budgets. So the four objects that are in this, this document are the meals, lodging, transportation, and then training registrations. From 2019 to 2024, of course, the pandemic years were in there. So you'll see in 2020 and 2021, spending was just tanked because nobody was doing anything. But consistently from 2019, 2022, 2023, 24, it's about 60% of what the budgeted item was, which leaves budget capacity on the table. So I'll go ahead and pass this around. That's the fund and then department level. You'll see how that funding was spent. That was identified during the budget process. Those budgets were reduced. And then a decision was made to consolidate those for tracking purposes. Those have been, after consideration, those budgets have been placed back into the departmental budgets. And so the appropriation didn't change at all. And those monies were always available to each department and current expense, but they were in a placeholder key and object. Any questions?
Question about that.
Sure.
We have the money put back in, but we're not getting as much as we even got last year. And we asked for more this year,
right?
Last year.
Right. Based on the historical information that we had, that money wasn't being spent.
Well, was there any effort to talk to individual offices or departments that were underspending? We weren't one of them. We were overspending.
We did not talk to individual departments about their training and travel budgets. What was submitted with your budget was our communication from you, what we needed. But we also were trying to find that budget capacity to pay for health insurance increases, wage increases, supplemental requests that really weren't funded. So those cuts were for those purposes.
I will tell you, and let's be sure, this is Commissioner Bacon. I'm about to say this to people and then I didn't do it myself. Let's say who we are for the record. So the assessor, Kelly Mock, made that last comment. And so what I would say to you, Kelly, is that if you want more money because you have all these different trainings, I think the commissioners would be happy to consider a budget amendment. If you're, I mean, we'll have the conversation. We would have the conversation about a budget amendment if you're going to spend extra more dollars than is in that budget. But we had to go with what we were seeing going on historically.
We sort of did an across the board cut, to be fair, in order to capture budget capacity. It's not but I don't disagree with the opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the budget and shortfall and all that. It just, when you make a unilateral decision and you're taking away training funds from, I don't know what Tony's is, but say he didn't spend all his training funds and I'm asking for more because I have a need in my office for, you know, maintaining certifications for my appraisers and any of that, there's no needs assessment done. You unilaterally cut my budget, not knowing what the consequences of that could be. I just think there needs to be more collaboration.
If you're making a major increase to one of your budget lines without explanation, you know, that looks like an inflationary increase, right? So if you're increasing it much larger, that should come with an explanation with your budget.
Ours are pretty much inflationary increases, and we explained that in our budget proposal.
Supplemental?
Yeah.
I don't remember there being a supplemental for training.
Yeah. All
the time. It wasn't in the budget book with the supplemental requests, and I peeled those out.
We have to...
The problem solution.
Yeah. Well, I didn't bring my budget book and I think it's in my narrative where I could pull that information. So we'll take a look at that, but I'm pretty sure that wasn't a training request there.
But with regard, Kelly, to your concern, please know, I'm assuming you all know this, but I need to say this for the record. The county commissioners want you and your staff to be fully trained and have all the training that you feel is necessary for your staff. We have no intention of saying, well, maybe only half your people need to go to training this year. That's your decision of who you train and where you train them. We're not trying to step on that at all. We're just trying to be responsible with the dollars by recognizing that people budget for things that they then do not spend. And then that money is not available for other needs that we have in the county.
So last 2 years, I budgeted the training so that it's allows. Oh, sorry. I budgeted training so it allows some of my staff to go to different conventions and such conferences to learn things. But due to the office turnarounds, there are staff that are leaving and hiring, and then there's going to be training, and so some of the trainings we cannot have them go, or can I have my chief deputy go because I needed her at the office to take over other things that was being missed. And that's why the last 2 years, the training budget has not been utilized as much. And it's always been my intent that we were going to use it, but things happen. So that's why it's short.
Thank you, John. Anyone else?
Comments affected?
Sure.
Actually, well,
I mean, I had a similar situation to Tony's too. I was looking at this is Greg Banks, the county prosecutor. I was looking at the spreadsheet that the budget director passed around, and I noticed that in 2019 we spent 96% of our training budget, and then in 2020 we spent 3%. So quite a drop. And coming out of the pandemic, I mean, my office was just beset by vacancies, and so. You know, similar to the assessor and the treasurer, though, really there was a long-term project in my office, which was to fortify our training budget, and we kept kind of trying to inch it up with a specific goal in mind. And that goal was currently my deputy prosecutors have mandatory training requirements, and we satisfy them by sending them to basically free training. We pay for lodging, everything else. It's in-state, and it's otherwise essentially at no cost to us. But it's kind of, it becomes a bit of an echo chamber, and it's kind of parochial. We keep just learning from each other. And what I wanted to be able to do was to be able to send at least two people per year to some national quality scale training. And that was a goal that we had worked towards for several years by finding areas from the budget. Because I keep presenting hold the line budgets and trying to move things around and make better use of things and seeing where we can make efficiencies. And so so that work, I mean, part of the issue here for me was that work was disregarded, not intentionally, but that was what happened because the efforts I had made to get to that point were then kind of just wiped out. And that's we'll live with what we have to live with. But I just wanted to point out that there were individual stories about all of our travel and training budgets. There's a supplies operating line item. That was one of the other things that was cut. And now that's what pays for our Westlaw subscription. And now it's not enough to cover our contract with Westlaw. So there is another instance where had we been consulted, we would have said, well, if you need to cut it, it's got to come from someplace else because that's a contractual obligation and we can't really work without legal research in my office. I made a couple of prepared remarks because like it or not, I found myself dealing with the board and dealing with the other elected officials. And we've had various discussions in different forums. And I'm really thankful that we're all here in one spot. And the department heads were largely, I think, cut out of some of those discussions too. And I guess first I just want to say, and I appreciate your comments at the beginning, Commissioner Bacon, that you were in a tough spot. You had policy needs and financial goals that you had to achieve, and there wasn't enough money. And so I actually thought, well, that was a pretty smart way to go about it, right? Well, let's see, because sometimes budgets are just they're just numbers, right? And we're acting like they're real when we're planning and say, oh, we don't have enough money, but maybe we do. There's just too much in certain line items. So I thought that's probably a really good place to start. And I guess where it broke down for me was in the past when there were shortfalls, and I can't remember if you were here in the 2008,
2009. I'm a
2010 person. Okay, sorry. So, yeah. So I know these two were... So, yeah, so there were, and Sheila was, there were massive, so a bunch of us were. There were massive layoffs, there were layoffs at the county, something virtually unheard of. And it wasn't the only year there were cuts. And the way it worked was the then boards told us, hey, there's not enough money. What can you do to help us meet our goals? And without exception, every department head, every elected official stepped up and said, we get it. You know, for the electeds, we're directly responsible to our constituents and we want to be responsible, but we also recognize we're part of a big enterprise. I mean, Island County is like family to me and I want the county to succeed too. And so had we been asked, Greg, we need to, you know, we've targeted your budget for $30,000, say, I don't even know what it was. I would have said, we'll be right back. We'll put something together and bring it to you and show the public how we're going to live with this cut and still deliver services the best way that we can. And I it was a little jarring that we didn't even have the opportunity to do that because we're all prepared. I would guess if I asked the other electeds, raise your hand in the department heads, if you would have responded with a team mentality and come back with cuts, would you have done it? I mean,
some of us did.
I wasn't asked.
Well, actually, we were told at the very beginning the difficulty that the board would be having. And so some of us included in our budgets cuts.
Well, that was very prescient of you. I would think that something like that would require an actual ask. I mean, that was my experience, and that would have been my expectation. And I don't, I heard talk that it was a tight budget year, but I can tell you for 28 years, I think I've heard that every year. So it doesn't stand out. And I think that's great that you picked up on that, Catherine. I guess the rest of us didn't. So I think that's good for you. We weren't so prescient to understand that we should have done that. I didn't learn about this until December 20th when we looked at what was our approved budget and saw that certain line items were zeroed out and some were reduced. And I mentioned that our Westlaw budget was cut. But then as I looked into it, we found out that this had been a discussion that happened in August and September. And I guess that, what I wish would have happened is someone would have just sent an email or phone call and said, hey, this is where we identified that the county's like, we're way over budgeted on this stuff. We need to get this under control. Can you respond by email, come in, make a presentation, just talk to us about these areas of your budget because that's what we're looking at. And it didn't happen. And from August until the end of December, I mean, it's 4 months before we found out on our own. And I brought that up and I think we received what felt like criticism that, well, we didn't attend the budget workshops, but it sounds like there was 27 hours of budget workshops.
It was a nightmare.
It was a lot. And
we don't
to be
expect you to have
fair,
those.
that's a lot of hours.
Yeah.
Most of those hours wouldn't be relevant to, say, my office. And so I couldn't, the public wouldn't want me to spend my time sitting through those. And I just can't. And the agendas, they just say budget discussion. They might say supplementals. They might say something else, but nothing pointed directly to this. So I didn't have a reason to go to those. And I'm still a little confused about the explanation about it's for better tracking. Because as I understand it, there's better tracking if the line items are by office, because then you could see with specificity, well, where is the training money going? Who's spending it? And then maybe make more policy-oriented decisions about, do we really need to spend that much on prosecutors? They've already been to law school. I mean, whatever the argument might be, I'm thinking of myself because that's the safest thing to do in this room. And I think you lose that tracking when it all goes. In no cap.
By the phone, you might want to move the phone.
Yeah, not
so anyway, I'm just not sure that that was, if that was the explanation, I guess I'm still a little confused about it. And I guess the reason I'm here, and I think the reason a lot of us are here, is this is an opportunity to maybe make some improvements on how we do budgets and how communications happen. I don't want to sound whiny, but we are independently elected officials. We're co-equal leaders. And I feel like we were cut out of a process that was really, I mean, it went right to our offices and our authority. And I know the board didn't do it in bad faith. And I 100% believe you that your understanding was this was, we weren't being denied authority, but I can tell you from our end, it sure felt like we were. And I think it looked like we were. We make our proposals because we know our offices, because we know what we need for each of those line items. You may disagree, and that's your prerogative. But at the end of the day, it's our offices to run. And So I would like to have a process that acknowledges that relationship perhaps better, because it didn't feel like that happened this time around. We didn't know. And these were significant changes to our proposals. I guess that's, you know, the other items I had about what I'd like to see. It's just really some better communication. You know, had an email gone out in August or September and said, hey, we're thinking of doing this to your budget. So if you have something to say, either, you know, submit something in writing or come to a meeting and you could have heard from us, because you would have heard from me. Yeah, I didn't spend because I had attorney vacancies, two, and I tried to send my chief criminal deputy to a week-long leadership training, and the hotel couldn't accommodate him because he was disabled. And they said, we don't have any disability rooms. And so we canceled that. And that was thousands of dollars that we didn't spend because of a training that we were unable to get to. And so then you would have said, oh, well, I guess you're not really underspending. That was just an artifact of circumstance. And we never got the opportunity to talk about that. So again, communication would have helped that. And the other thing, and this is maybe just a technical thing I can talk to Susan about, but when we first pulled up our budget in December, it looked like our proposals had been edited down to zero. We couldn't find, it seemed like there should have been a column for proposals and a column for approved. And I gather that maybe that was a permission thing, or maybe we're just not using it right. But we were able to find it today. And I don't know if you flipped a switch.
Are you talking about the personnel services when you first open it? Because we had to zero that out to import those lines from another section of ClearGov.
I was talking about, it was the travel, training, and the supplies operating, supplies office, and dues and memberships. Those line items all had, when we looked in ClearGov, they showed figures, the travel and training were zeroed out and the other ones were less. And they just had like a flag or something that said edited. And it said in progress. And so I didn't mm-hmm. know if that was the column of what our proposals were and they'd have been edited, or if that's just how it appears in ClearGov. And my concern was, you know, it's not just, oh, I love these numbers. It's, I think the public and all of us, you know, we need to have visibility of the budget that's adopted, but I think the public also has to have access to what was proposed if they want to say, well, what does the sheriff think he needs to run a sheriff's office? Each of our proposals should be as accessible as what was finally approved, and that and it may be we were just using it wrong. Because Kristen today told me that actually, if you go over here, you can see the column that says proposed, mm-hmm. and it did reflect that. So I don't know mm-hmm. if that was a recent change.
There, you can view each version of the budget in ClearGov.
Uh-huh.
And so you go to the columns and you select the versions you want to see. They should be in chronological order. Each time I save a version, I put a date behind it so you can see what the version is. There isn't a way to open ClearGov up for public viewing during the budget process. It's sure. only after the budget process is over. But we keep a book and of the workbook, the proposed budget workbook that each commissioner gets. I have a copy, the county administrator had a copy, and we have a public copy here as well. It shows everything that is submitted by each department and what their proposal is compared to their prior budgets and their current spending.
And where does the public version of that live in the commissioner's office?
It comes to
each
one of the work sessions
in the commissioner's office,
but live
on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah,
that's good.
And it's about that.
Yeah, thing. I've seen them. Yeah, I've seen the books when you guys
were they're big books
on a handcart. Okay. Well, anyway, I've talked a lot. I appreciate you hearing me out.
I do want to respond to what you said, Greg. I, on behalf of the Board of County Commissioners, I agree with most of what you said, maybe not all of it, most of what you said. And you're absolutely right that we failed to communicate with you. And I apologize. You're absolutely right. We failed to communicate with you. And I think this is a really important lesson for us in how to do it this next year. It's going to be more work for you.
lesson learned in the process with you has been
microphone.
I say, Tony, talk on the phone, whatever this is. Janet St. Clair, County Commissioner. What I hear and have heard is it is hard to, you know, even with your executive staff, your administrative staff, to track every single thing. I hear that. And so to say if there are going to be significant changes that we communicate proactively, and that's what I hear, and I think that's what I hear Commissioner Bacon affirming, that there is always room for communication, for improvements. And there's certainly, you know, the number one thing that seems to cause challenges is communication. So I hear that, and I affirm what Commissioner Bacon said to all of you, that we can be better at communication.
Thank you.
Great that from both of you. I really do. And I wasn't asking for an apology either. And I was trying to avoid calling it failure. It's just saying, I think, oh, maybe we could do better.
Thank you, Greg. No, we absolutely, no question, we can do better, and we will do better.
So, Rick Felici, County Sheriff. So each year when my office prepares a budget proposal, we do our best, and none of us are accountants, to go line by line and look at which line was sufficient for the previous year and is likely to be sufficient for the next year, and which ones are underfunded, and we try to make budget adjustments. And it sounds to me like that's essentially what happened here, was the board and the budget staff looked at the entire budget and looked for those common areas of, you know, where is there some money under the sofa cushions? And I appreciate, very much appreciate the position that the board and the budget staff is in, especially in the lean times that we're in. But I wonder, did the board look at items that were traditionally or consistently under budgeted through the years, right? Because one of the things that I do is move money. We do budget adjustments in our individual budgets throughout the year when we realize, hey, we're not going to be able to spend X, but we need money in this line item. So I don't know why this is cutting in and out, but
the recording gets fixed up.
So that ability to move money within an elected official's budget, I think, is inherent with the office. And I can't speak for department heads. I don't know whether that's accurate there. But I think there's a lot of work that can be done countywide, and certainly in my office portion of the county budget, for balancing those things out. But this particular process, and I'm glad that, you know, we're getting a chance to talk about it, eliminates the ability, or at least perceives that I don't have the ability to make those adjustments within the sheriff's budget. Had we had a conversation about, hey, sheriff, you've only spent X percent of your budget for the last 3 years for training. I would have told you why, and B, I would have had the opportunity to look at, hey, where do you want to make up some money, right? Where can we make up money? So I don't want to beat that horse. I mean, we're all kind of on the same page here. And I sincerely appreciate the fact that we're having a candid conversation about it. I think we could have a lot more conversations in moving forward and how we do our budget, how we establish budget. I agree with Greg. As many years as I've been here, I've never gone into a budget session where somebody said, hey, there's plenty of money, ask for whatever you want, right? It just doesn't happen, you know, and it probably shouldn't happen, right? There's always the underlying, you know, hold the line budget mentality. So it's hard to know when one year is worse than the other from where I sit.
So to answer your question, we did try to look, and Susan, correct me if I get this wrong. We took a look as we went through at variances throughout number of line items, not just training and travel. So we looked at supplies. Where are we underspending on supplies? We looked at positions that had gone unfilled. And I do believe we talked to folks about unfilled positions to make sure we had that information. We'll revisit that. I know we had some conversations about unfilled positions. And so we did try to go through line items in certainly within the departmental budgets to say where are with their variances, where we can capture, again, to the end goal of covering healthcare costs. It was really about, and you guys, I appreciate your recognition. Our end goal was to really recognize our greatest resources as the people, and we were trying to address the issues of wage and benefits. If we didn't, happy to talk with you offline. We did try to reach out to folks.
Yeah, Island County, I think, it's, even the years before I was here, and you guys who are here will remember that the county's always tried to be creative to avoid doing anything that penalizes the employees. We do everything we can to give people a living wage, to give them reasonable wage adjustments every year. And even when other counties around us were putting people on furloughs, they were putting them on, they were terminating people's employment because they didn't have enough money. What Island County did was they put them on, 4 days a week instead of 5 days a week. There was a period of time. So we tried very, very hard to find ways to, you know, keep people employed and recognize, as you said, Janet, that's our greatest asset.
But I do want to affirm that I hear you, that you didn't feel consulted on positions.
Totally.
Absolutely. And I do want to hear reassure that we hear you on, you know, our process and being more inclusive and with you about how we make those choices. It was just an answer to the question of, did we look at anything other than training and travel? And the answer was yes.
My question was more, did you look at any other trend analysis to line items within budgets that were consistently short, right? So I may have a line item in my budget for something else, some other thing that wasn't training.
Okay.
Overtime, for example.
We know where it is, right?
Each department, when the budget is adopted, you're allowed and expected to manage your budget within your appropriation. So when those things happen, it's not questioned whether you overspend that. We are assuming that you are looking at your budget and managing it actively. So there's nobody's going to come back and say, why did you overspend in office supplies, even though we see that you've underspent in another area? We realize you're managing your budget actively.
That's good to know. It's a little bit lost on me in this particular topic, but we're going the right direction. I don't want to drag feet. Okay. And it's not about blame. It's just about how we can do it better.
Yes.
Well, it's not just the board or legislators.
So there's some people in here who don't come to our meetings very often. I'm assuming that you had a reason that you wanted to be here today. Did you have anything that you wanted to share?
One of the reasons I don't come to the meetings is I fill in where my staff does not. And so when you're having your meeting, for me to take 2 hours out of my day, mm-hmm. I have 3 courtrooms going. That puts 3 to 5 people out of my office. There's no room for the phones, the front counter.
Sure.
I fill in where my staff does not. So mm-hmm. it's really difficult for me to get out of the office.
Well, no, we're grateful that you're able to come here today, Deborah. I just didn't know if you had anything you wanted to add to that. Shows that this particular topic was really important to you.
Yes.
And I wanted to give you a chance to speak if you chose to. Thank you. Anybody else have anything they want to say about training and travel, which is part of the same conversation? Did you want to address supplies at all, Susan?
The Amazon?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We had heard that some departments were not buying certain supplies for their offices, considering them to be personal items. But when we found out what they were, hand soap, dish soap, or tissues, we considered those health and wellness things for taking care of our employees. So those items should be purchased for your department if you need them. They're not something that you take home. Employees use them for their own wellness while they're at work. So you can purchase those things through Amazon. You don't have to purchase them from facilities. Facilities takes care of those things for the common areas, but not for the individual departments. They supply paper supplies, those type of things. So wanted to make sure that that was clear.
What did we do with regard to supplies in the budget?
Operating supplies were reduced by 10% and office supplies were reduced by 10%. In current expense only, we didn't address the grant funded mm-hmm. funds or the special revenue funds.
Is that 10% of the total or 10% of each individual budget?
I believe it's 10% of the individual budgets.
In current expense.
Current expense.
Well, but all over it.
Yes.
Current expense. But we want you to be able to buy your bullets. Don't. That was the thing that you were concerned about. Was
Kleenex.
Well, we don't need bullets in our house.
I know.
Actually, on the Kleenex things, what is it? I mean, is there a list of items? I think we've been buying our own Kleenex. I don't remember. That's been a discussion. I mean, would it include things like we take turns or we contribute to a Costco run in my office to buy things like paper plates and napkins and stuff? Is that, it's not a big deal. I'm just curious. Is that one of the things you're thinking, oh, that's an office supply because it's for meals eaten in the office? Or is that really outside of?
These are those judgment call areas.
I'm not asking right? to move it into the county's budget right. either. I just want to know what the rules are.
Yeah. I mean, the personal policies and procedures manual talks about personal use. Mm-hmm. It's not by item, but we expect that you would use judgment in what okay. that means. Most offices have plates and yeah. silverware right. that can be washed in the sink. Reusable.
Our office and most of the offices upstairs, we each as individuals pay money for water,
right?
We pay yeah. money for water because the coop fill water is it's been cleaned. It's, you know, they have their system. It's clean water. It's safe water.
Just to be clear,
it's safe water, but we choose for taste reasons to purchase water.
Yeah.
So the county does not pay for that. So yeah. it is a
same with us. In fact, we just stopped. People bring their own bottled water in now because it was too hard to collect from people to pay for the water bill every month. So she said, bring your own water if you don't like the tap water.
This I think came out of confusion regarding staff buying dish soap for the common kitchen. No Kleenex. I had a bad cold in January and couldn't find a box of Kleenex to save my life. And so it was sort of silly,
yeah.
small things. So we thought we'd just clarify for everyone that your office is entitled to have a box of Kleenex on hand if needed. Because, you know, I mean, we're getting into some things, but there was confusion and there was resentment because of that confusion. So we want to clarify that, you know, you cannot be ordering your own, I don't know, Greg, what would you order that would be frivolous and silly?
I don't know. I think we buy her. I think we might have started buying Kleenex with county dollars finally, because it's a victim thing.
Oh yeah, you have people.
We
cry.
Go through a lot of okay. We go through a lot of Kleenex.
Yeah,
it could be a staff.
Yeah, so, it could be a staff.
I think we just wanted to clarify out loud that those things that are typically used in a place of business for health and safety, please make sure you're not having your staff figure out whose turn it is to buy the dish soap at your common kitchen sink.
Okay. Sorry, didn't mean to go down that rabbit hole.
No, it's okay. Thank you.
Appreciate
I wanted to, Kevin, I told Kevin Graves, can you turn your camera on now, Kevin, please? Thank you. So Kevin does a employee newsletter, and I know we all have things that should go in the new employee newsletter. So can you kind of talk about that for just a couple minutes, Kevin?
You know, the employee newsletter.
Swimming.
We're not hearing you. Is that our problem on this end?
No.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
You have to
yes.
In.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got a new computer and it seems to be not so great at voice. Yeah, the newsletter has been pretty popular with the employees. Generally, when one goes out, I get some responses from people saying they really like it, they enjoy reading it. And a lot of it is learning about other employees, what they do, what their work involves. I just do a simple questionnaire. But what I'm bumping up to is a lot of people get modest and they don't want to be featured in the newsletter, which is, I understand, but it really is important that people learn about their coworkers. It's good to know what other people are doing and what challenges they face, what they like about their jobs. And it's not a hard read and it's not a probing interview. It's just, you know, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is what I like. So if you could kind of help me along those lines, and when I go looking for people to profile, it's really helpful to have your backing. Because everybody gets modest. Nobody wants to be in a newsletter, but they love reading about other people. So it's kind of a catch-22 there. Let's see. We're coming out quarterly now. This last one, like I said, has been challenging just because everybody's gotten very modest. Everybody I've approached doesn't want to be featured. But also the newsletter is if you guys and your staffs think of things they want to see in the newsletter, what they want to read, let me know. I mean, it's a work in progress. It's always going to be evolving. And I appreciate input and I request it every time. And I do get some feedback on occasion and I follow through with it, and that's made for some good newsletters. If you know, you could just kind of have it on your radar and communicate with me and let me know what's going on in your offices and what other employees might like to know about.
Are you also looking for success stories from within our departments?
Yeah, and I've run those too, and really, really, really like having those to share. And like I said, that's the sort of thing people enjoy reading. You know, it's not meant to be a heavy read. It's just meant to be, you know, fun. And, you know, just, you know, you see people's faces in the hallway and you learn a little bit more about them.
I mean, as Greg said earlier, we're all part of the same team. And if you know, someone from the auditor's office has something special happens, maybe somebody in the clerk's office would like to know about it. So this is our chance to.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it. Thank you. I added on congressional spending. So we have lobbyists. Merchant McIntyre is our lobbyist group in Washington, D.C. And there actually is still federal dollars being spent on some things. There's a number of federal grants out there. They can't go looking for grant dollars for us, though, unless they know of projects that we have that really could benefit from those grant dollars. So I just kind of wanted to open this up a little bit. So for example, Sheila, we've talked to them about an elections office. I mean, we talk to them about these sorts of things. So maybe there's something that you really need to have in your office and you're 50% through the design of it or the idea of it, and you just want to kind of build that up and try to see if there are federal funds that we could approach or try to get in order to help us to achieve that. We need to know what that is so that we can work on that with you and for you. And Janet's going to be going to, you're going to be talking to Merchant McIntyre next week, aren't you?
Right. But for the existing projects that uh-huh. we have lined up that we're seeking congressional funding for, but to Commissioner Bacon's point, we do this every year as well as throughout the year. So if you have, you know, I think about the some of the things that the coroner's office has needed over the time that could have perhaps come from a source of federal funding or other issues, you know, across the board. We have used it for our public works department in solid waste. We've used, I believe, federal funding for some facilities issues. So certainly it's an ongoing source of funding. We have a small list of things we're going forward with, as well as we, if you know of federal grants that you are pursuing and you would like the support of our lobbyists, please let us know. Public health, for example, is someplace where there is federal grants that you're pursuing. Please let us know and we can make sure we bring that forward in DC. Even we don't have to physically be there, but they will be for us and on your behalf.
Up to this point, most of the attention that we put into this has been on in those departments that report to the commissioners, because those are the projects we know. But I'm sure that elected officials have projects you'd like to see pursued, if you could. But if we don't know what they are, we can't help you to get those funds or help you get other ideas. Any other thoughts about that?
Want that contact you directly as far as the ideas?
Talk to me. Okay. Talk to me. I'm sitting in these, I'm in meetings with these people every 2 weeks. So yeah, absolutely.
Do these include projects that involve personnel additions, or is that not typically something that?
I don't know, Greg. If you have a project, I think, and you have an idea of maybe a program, then you're going to need personnel in order to pursue a certain program. I think that I would encourage you to meet with me and with Merchant McIntyre and talk about it and see if they have any ideas. They know all of these different pots of money that are out there and how to go about applying for them. They're really very knowledgeable of what they do.
So, for example, this week I'll be speaking on the Stepping Up Initiative, which was something that was begun under Helen Price Johnson, and we received, this was a while. Right. So that's an example of, you know, what happens when we go to DC and the kinds of initiatives or projects we can pursue funding or other things for. So that's one that clearly you two would know about.
Okay. Thank you. Well, we
don't know about
and a courthouse dog.
A courthouse dog.
For traumatizing witnesses.
Oh my gosh! What a lovely idea.
Which is done a lot of times, especially in trauma and interviewing, and
we've used them in trials, but we borrowed them from Skagit County. We have the handlers come down here, and they. To our trials with the Skagit.
It may sound silly, but it's
no, it very, does very not.
And I know we talked about even
everyone in my office says my dog could be the courthouse dog. Can I bring him to work?
Of course I do. So it's so the dog and a handler.
Or if somebody in the office could be trained to do it.
I remember I spoke with Rick, your department, a while back when we were talking about some of the animal therapies that are available in our area for first responders. And over in my neck of the woods, there's an organization that brings out, I think your department's taken advantage on retreats, that comes out for retreats to first responders that helps deal with trauma. So it's not only our clients, it's also a fire police.
It's been
animal
therapy. The best examples I've seen have been in child victims of sexual abuse, for example. One of the organizations that we use for help with interviews used to have, you know, and the dog would literally sit there with their head on the child's lap while they were being, you know, interviewed for a very difficult thing. And it was an extremely calming thing to have for especially for people who are victims of trauma. But you're absolutely right. There's.
I have a family member who had a certified trauma dog because of that brain detail because of trauma.
Yeah, how's that for the foundation? Okay, so you tell you're getting ideas, you're thinking, we're thinking about what we do. All right, so we haven't had a roundtable discussion for a very long time. I think that most people don't know what everybody else is working on. So I look forward to this. So, and how about we start this way? So Sean Morris, who is back with us. We're glad that you could be here today.
Thank you. I look familiar. happy to be back. So our team, we're working on moving forward with the Community Health Improvement Plan, or the CHIP, and that follows the Community Health Assessment, or the CHAW. And I just put a plug in, if you haven't seen our published CHAW, it's available on the assessment section of our website. And it's really a deep dive into, you know, the community needs. It involves extensive research and interviews, discussion with community members. And so it's there, it's available, and we'll be moving into improvement strategies over the next year. We have a number of projects underway, and I won't dive into all of those, but you know, we're still working to align and support planning on the comprehensive plan and going through, you know, the impact where there's overlap with public health. And we're working a lot on our communications and outreach and sharing our impact with the community. We have an impact report that's also available on our main page and details some of what we've been up to over this past year. And then I just also put a plug in for, you know, flu prevention. It's been seasonal flu continues to be very high. So, you know, we know that impacts our teams and our community members. We have folks who are more at risk for severe disease, but there's prevention guidance on the respiratory illness section of our website. I know there's been alerts going out around the Kameno water situation. There's a Group A water system that issued a boil advisory for a portion of the Kameno Hills water system, including our county facilities. And we're working closely with the Washington State Department of Health, who is the lead regulatory agency. The King Water that oversees that system is completing testing, and we're working with them to see if they can get this situation resolved as quickly as possible, but reach out with any questions related.
Was that, my understanding was that there was a car versus hydrant collision that caused that system to lose a tremendous amount of water. Is that what impacted the quality of the water? Was the well was drawn down? Because I'm having trouble putting.
That's exactly right.
Toxifying the system. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a precautionary measure only. They need to go through the testing to show that there has not been contamination, but it's all precautionary. And until then, the boil notice is in effect.
So through the second half of last year and into this year, I have had five labor agreements that are open. We've been bargaining. It looks like we're getting close on two of them. And then the sixth one is going to be open at the end of this year. So we're starting early so we can hopefully have an agreement within the year it's ending. I'm working with the board on updating the job description for the replacement for the county administrator. And we anticipate that going out for recruitment next month. You know, and we just mostly finished all of our year-end things for HR. So as these labor agreements resolve, we'll have a lot of work to do in payroll because we'll have to get all the pay changes in for all of the bargaining unit members. On the GSA side, we started the BOE hearings this week. I think we're doing 3 days a week over 3 weeks, and then we should be completed. We had like 39 appeals this year. I mean, Kelly did a great job of working through and getting a bunch resolved, which is really helpful. And then we had a lot of people, we've been told by the Department of Revenue that we can't give any advice when they submit their appeals. So there were a lot of appeals that were just outright rejected because they were incomplete. So that's reduced that a little bit. And then on the with the mail room, I think all of you know that there's been an issue with the electronic lock, and it's there are only certain keys that can access the mail room. So I've asked that everybody have their staffs use the hallway mailboxes as much as they possibly can. But if you have big mailings, just reach out to Amy, either call her or email her and let her know that you have a big mailing and or your staff has a big mailing and that they can she can meet them in the mail room. We've had a lot of people coming up at all throughout the day asking to get into the mail room, which completely disrupts the work that the other work that Amy does. And so if you can help me with that, it would be great. I'd appreciate it until we have the issue resolved.
Sorry. Is Amy the contact person to email if there are outgoing mail that's placed in the mailbox, but it's been sitting for a few days? Is Amy the person to contact
email? There shouldn't be any mail sitting for a few days unless it was just the last couple of days, because we actually didn't get any mail yesterday, which means we didn't get Saturday and we didn't get Monday. But that shouldn't be a problem, but I'll double check on that if that happened, Tony, and make sure it gets corrected. Yep.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Good afternoon, Jonathan Lang, Planning Director. I just wanted to give an update about the comprehensive plan update for 2025. I wanted to thank everyone, all the department heads that are working on that collaboratively. And we have upcoming drafts coming out. So Clinton sub-area plan draft just went out for comment. And you can find that on our website, and also Island County 2045, which is a public participation website for the comprehensive plan update. So in May, we'll have draft elements coming out for each of the elements of the comprehensive plan. And so if you have any input or have any comments on those, and then we'll be having some public meetings during that time.
Susan?
So this next budget cycle, the goal is to move up the adoption of the budget to the first Monday in October. So we built a schedule around that, which I believe I did distribute already, of all of the work sessions. Some of the discussion during this last budget process when we were talking with the board about supplemental budget requests was that some of them were the first time they'd seen them. So they didn't have a lot of information about those requests. So we'd like to ask for discussion ahead of the budget process to talk about what you're going to request or what your needs are, so that when we're in the budget process, they can make a better informed decision. So I'm going to try to move that up to have a request out to you sometime in March for that information, and then bring it to either a roundtable or a work session in April ahead of the budget process. And so those are the adjustments for this year to the process, which is an evolution. We're trying to improve it all the time.
That's for any supplementals, sort of preload. That actually makes sense, I think, because we probably know early in the year we're starting to think, you know what I really need.
Yeah. It'll still go through the regular budget right. process, but at least that communication piece will be better.
As you've probably seen in the newspaper, we will be having a countywide election in April 22nd for the ICOM funding. So be ready for it and know that it is coming. The board provided that to us, and Greg's finalizing the explanatory, and we do have a pro and con committee this time.
Oh, so a con committee.
Oh, yes, my goodness. Ma'am.
Okay, they signed up.
And we thank the commissioners for the graciousness with which you have addressed our concerns. They were significant. I doubt that any of you realize that in a non-major election year, our postage increase will be almost $5,000, but it will. Every time the legislature meets, there are bills that impact our budget. And I think that was the thing that really caused us the greatest concern, that how do we meet those mandates without the funding there to be able to take care of that? And I appreciate your understanding. As far as everything else, we're doing well. We've had a really successful year for licensing and recording already. We are working on the accounting side of the house, and everyone's doing well, and we're grateful for the help we received from everyone else in meeting our timelines.
Now, I know that licensing was closed because they were getting a new system. The state had a new system. So how'd that rollout go?
Day one was not really great on Tuesday, okay. As was expected, but they were able to get us into certain areas of the program by about 3 p.m. And the following day, it was as though we were in the old system again, yet the new. Everything was there as it should be. So they used their time wisely and well. So we're all always fearful of those changes, but this turned out well.
Okay. Thank you.
And we are recruiting for a half-time person. So we have 3 folks to interview later this week, and we hope to have a full team back down there.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Nothing from the coroner's office?
Nothing from the coroner's office.
Just working through backlog of trials.
Okay.
Lots going on in the clerk's office.
Thank you. We're happy that you, the two of you joined us today. Thank you. Tony.
Probably taxes went out in case you didn't know. So if there are phone calls coming to your department because people accidentally punched the wrong number, that's probably the reason why. Because I have a client calling us and, hey, these guys are calling us for some reason, and it's because of typo. But the tax statements are out, and we've been bombarded with a lot of phone calls this past few days, as well as a pickup on the property tax payment, which is income for us, so yay. Let's see. I think that was about it, because the mailroom thing was a question I had. The travel and the training form, are we required to fill those out or?
So
it was just tracking
tool. It's just a tracking tool. I'm not.
is it something to revisit later? I don't know.
It's not a required thing. It would help with the board wanting some tracking information and kind of how the money is being spent.
Yeah, this is not an issue that's going to go away. Yeah. We're going to have to figure this thing out in 2026. We're going to have to have a better handle on this. Okay. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
No one's going to get
your case about it.
Mm-hmm. So for IT this year, our biggest project is we're going to be replacing over half the county's desktops and laptops. So we are proceeding on that as quickly as we can. Please be patient with us. You may know that you're listed for a computer, but you're one of 300 and something people that are on the list to be replaced. The other thing that we just finished is the Genetech software application, which was managed by facilities, which basically controls the key cards and the dress buttons for the county. IT has taken over management of that. If you need a replacement card, come see us for new employees. So it was going through HR. Other than that, we are in the process of interviewing a new support manager. Hopefully we will have someone hired within the next 3 weeks and get that person on board so we can move forward even faster with the computers being deployed and the other stuff we need to get accomplished. and we are currently implementing the new log management application that we are deploying this year. This will improve cybersecurity and also our ability to troubleshoot issues with problems across systems. So, that's it.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I've got a few things going on in human services. One thing with our housing program, we are adjusting to diminished budgets for that housing assistance. A lot less money is coming in from the federal government and the state. We just last year ran out of all the last of COVID money, but of course the need has increased as the funds have decreased. So we're getting creative in what we can do in that particular program. Our veterans program is getting very inundated, which is a good thing. It's come on board less than 3 years ago, but last year we put $3.41 million back in veterans' pockets through our veteran services officer. Right now, though, his wait list is about 2 months out. And of course, again, budget constraints, we cannot hire an additional VSO, but we have partnered with the VA with the blessing of the commissioners. So with no cost to the county, we are getting an intern who is going to work 25 hours a week to alleviate some of the administrative burden on the VSO, allowing him to spend his time really in front of the folks who need him and have that administrative burden taken care of. We've had some staff turnover in behavioral health, particularly in our law enforcement co-responders and our jail substance use disorder counselor. We've gotten one new person on board and they're training and working with our OHPD. We're still looking for an SUD counselor, but luckily we've got some depth on the bench. And so for the group therapy that has to happen in the jail, we've been able to tap people from different areas of behavioral health and within human services to keep those services going forward while we're trying to fill that position. With our recent expansion of our harm reduction services and syringe services program, we've increased the number of individuals served on a weekly basis at our three syringe services program locations by a significant percentage. And so that continues to go well. And on our last bit of good news, our developmental disabilities program is breaking records left and right with numbers and percentages of clients being employed. And some recently consistently over 90% for over the last 7 months, which has been unheard of recently. So even in spite of some of the challenges we've had, we're able to celebrate some victories. So thanks for listening to me.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Ryan Beach, Director of Facilities Management. So with departmental moves, we were able to move public health upstairs in the annex, which went really well. And I want to thank his staff for being courteous and kind and doing their part. We are now working on the first floor to kind of right size the permitting department, planning and things like that. So we're working on removing furniture and starting that renovation now. Something else that's on the horizon soon is we're going to be replacing two elevators in Law and Justice. So I'm still waiting on the calendar for that from TK Elevator. So, but that's coming up very, very shortly. So I'm hoping any day now to push out a calendar of activities for the people that are in that building. So of course we're gonna do one at a time, not both, but I think we're in a good place to do that. And then I realized that I create an update for the board and I give it to them whenever I meet with them. But is anyone else interested in receiving kind of a projects in work from facilities? I'm sure. Okay. So I was sitting here thinking, why don't I do that? So I'm going to do that now. And just let everybody else know what's happening around the county with our building. So any questions?
I don't know if we're at a place where we can talk about, but I just want to assure the coroner and the clerk that we are cognizant of your space issues and we are actively trying to find resolutions to your space issues.
Yeah, there is a plan.
Which is an asset.
There is a plan in place, but there's a few things that have to happen before we get there. But that is the end goal.
Are you willing to share sort of that plan?
So we purchased a building on Bayshore in Oak Harbor that's in permitting for that renovation, and we're planning on moving Health and Human Services from the North Libby Family Resource Center to that building. It's right next to the bus depot. It's a perfect spot. That opens up space in the North Libby FRC. I think it's on First Street in Oak Harbor for the corner space, move them there. And then once the corner moves out of Law and Justice, we can move space there, take their office for the clerk. So that's going to address hopefully what you need. And then there's some other things we need to do in your space to make it more livable. But it's all in plan. It just takes a while to get all the permitting done, all the bidding. So it takes a while for each project, each phase of it. So, okay.
Do you know how long an elevator replacement takes once that actually starts or is that just...
6 to 8 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yes. So that's why I'm reaching out to them each month, phone calls, and like, where is the stuff? You know, where's it coming from? Where's it at? Where are you? So, but they did come out, did more measurements and photos. So it's going to be happening soon.
It's going to be noisy a bit.
It could be a little bit. Yeah.
And there are a fair number of people that come to my office and like Greg's that can't use the stairs. So, yeah. 6 to 8 weeks seems like a really long time. It is what it is.
I'd rather have it fixed and instead of having an elevator that's not supported anymore. So.
Or have somebody stuck in it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I guess that's, I mean, Rick makes a good point. We'll need to make sure we have a system in place for people to reach us by whatever mechanism.
Yeah, I don't know if we could maybe work with the security staff in the courthouse to help. I don't know how we could use the other elevator for the public as an alternative, for example. I don't know how that's even feasible.
Maybe we can have a sort of temporary wireless intercom from downstairs for folks. I mean, I don't know. Yeah,
we could set up a phone.
Yeah, something.
Okay. Yeah, we'll work it out. It was supposed to be done January, February. As February obviously slips away, it's March, April. So, but I'll let you know as soon as I know anything. And then I'll send out the update to everybody that's actually all the distro on this list probably would be happy to get that. So that's all I have.
Thank you.
Prosecutor's office, we were so close to being fully staffed.
Sorry, Greg.
Got two vacancies. Yeah. Well, that's filled. So actually, Eric O, my former chief deputy, is court commissioner, has been there since January. But I've got both of my chief positions filled. And I got to say, you know, when you work with the same person for 20 years, it's like, that got divorced when they leave. I mean, it's hard. But my new chief deputy, Laura Twitchell, who I introduced down here the other day, boy, it's really a lot of fun having a person from outside with new ideas and just different experiences that didn't grow up in the little island county bubble. And so that's been great for both. For all of us, really, on the criminal side of my office. And then have a new chief civil deputy too. And some of you may remember Dave Jameson, who was my chief civil deputy for about 70, 80 years. And even though I'd had several chief civils after Dave, I still think of Dave as my former chief civil deputy. And there's a lot of similarities, I think, between Paul and Dave. And so it's almost nostalgic having Paul in the office. Really appreciate that. We're busy. We have a couple of civil lawsuits. There's a enforcement action should have been filed today in Clinton. I believe that was filed in Superior Court today. Should have been if it wasn't. We have some lawsuits against us that are in our office because they're not courts. And so those are interesting. And Tony, I'll happily, if you want to send your phone calls to me, I will send my phone calls to you. And then we can meet at the end of the month. See who has the best stories. And that's it. I'm down one deputy prosecutor, and I will shortly be down one of our victim witness people who's going to work at the public defender's office. So won't be far away.
So Greg, one of the things that Dave J used to do is he used to review the regular agenda for the board and the work session every week, and then let us know in advance you know, I was HR at that time. He'd let me know, by the way, Melanie, have you thought about this, this, and this when you go talk to the commissioners about this thing on the work session? It was so helpful. So I'm just wondering if you think we'll ever get to a place where we'd have that level of support again.
Well, I will see what I could do about that, because it's funny, Paul comes from slightly different environment, working in other municipal agencies where it wasn't uncommon for him to be at board meetings, as is common with cities and port districts and the like, uh-huh. Not so much with counties. So we can talk about that.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Not listening.
Did you hear that bus go by? Rick Felici, Annan County Sheriff. We are, as always, busy, and it seems like, as always, struggling with filling our current positions. Although they're small, there's some improvement along those lines. We went through a really good period of having a number of really good applicants coming out of a time period in 2019 to 22 of having just almost none, and there's a huge amount of competition for any qualified applicants in the law enforcement profession in Washington. Numbers statewide are still dramatically down from what we historically were used to as far as people who want to enter this profession. But I think last year in 24, we set a record. I think we hired 6 new deputies, which is awesome, except I think I had 7 people leave. So it's a net minus one. And there's lots of changes going on. The only constant in my business is that things change every day. Some significant leadership changes happening as we speak. My chief criminal deputy, Evan Tingstead, has announced his retirement after almost 40 years of service to Island County. I'm going to leave a gigantic hole in our organization, but I think he's earned it, it also creates opportunity. Like Greg said, sometimes new ideas, fresh look, different perspective can really help an organization and internal culture and that sort of stuff. So I have appointed about to be former Detective Sergeant Chris Peabody as my new chief criminal deputy. And I think that's going to be a lobby painting opportunity at some levels. And I think he brings a tremendous amount of skill and training and experience to that position, and that'll be helpful. We're still trying to figure out the trickle down from that, because of course it vacates his current detective sergeant position and all of the moving pieces that have to go in with that. But overall, we're doing very well, although people are working way too much. As I'm sure the board is aware, we're spending a ridiculous amount of money on overtime. But I'm optimistic that there's light at the end of the tunnel. We have a bunch of really good, new, young, fresh perspectives in the organization. And it's been kind of cheerful that we've been able to get some really good young people out there. So real high expectations. And I think that they'll blow through my expectations. As far as crime and criminal activity in the county, I think we're kind of status quo. There are no dramatic trends that I'm aware of. We're doing what we do and, trying to do it better with less all the time, just like everybody else. So.
Judge Bostic, do you have anything? Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
Coming on.
Sure. I'm Judge Bostic, 2 District Court. I guess we've had a lot of transition and no transition. Happy to say that we've kind of stabilized our workforce after what represented almost a 200% turnover in a decade. We managed to go a year without losing anybody, which is pretty impressive. So we're happy with that. Good workforce. We hired Eric Ohm as our new district court commissioner. He just finished his judicial training. So he's back in full force. The numbers, we're increasing in revenue and we're increasing slightly in criminal cases. I think that's from a lot of filings from your office.
Well, I think you'll see that with energized young deputies out there, you're seeing a lot more court activities.
So. And so I know that we're headed towards more trials, that's for sure. After coming into COVID, we'd gone down quite a bit. And now that trend is changing. So we're going to be tapping that unused budget probably in that area as our trials go up. but also on a note, we're trying to develop access to our course much more so. We've recently developed the web page. You might have noticed it on our web page. It's gone from almost non-existent to right up there in the forefront. We're putting forms online, we're creating links to court, all that kind of stuff, so we can get South End, Camino, all those involved in the court process with least amount of impact on them. So to give them equal access to be able to download that kind of information and file it online. So everything from public records requests to, which is separate from the county, to forms for restraining orders and protection orders and things like that. So we're working forward on that. In terms of future plans for district court, I really am slowed down a bit, but I really am moving towards the therapeutic court. I'd like to work with Greg's office and develop some processes and procedures in the city as well. Because as you may not know, but we do all the cities in Island County as well. So from Langley all the way up to Oak Harbor, we handle their cases as well. So I'd like to get a therapeutic program going, a small one, one specifically designed for issues that are plaguing our community. And so, but that's a future plan. I'm hopefully transition towards that towards summer. So that's about it.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming up. Is Megan Frazier still on the, are you there, Megan? Doesn't look like it. Okay. As far as
I have one. Oh, by
yes,
the way.
Please.
Since everyone's discussing projects and futures, if you could loop in facilities early, I would really appreciate it.
And
also, a plug for us.
I have to give a thanks for facilities. They've been working with us for the first time. We're getting some security and cameras in there. Also, they've made our building accessible. And I know they came in short notice and did an incredibly good job for us. So thank you.
Thank you.
That was quite an undertaking. Really short.
It was.
It was wonderful. For the commissioners, one of the things we did recently is we kind of lost control. You know, during COVID, the commissioners in the past had been very careful about, no, you can't work from home. And then during COVID, we kind of let people start working from home some. And then we kind of lost any kind of control over them. There'd be some offices where there wouldn't be hardly anybody in the office there physically to serve the public. So we're kind of reining that in back in again now, and we're trying to put some guardrails around it. So that's one of the things that we're doing. Starting, apparently ecology, you can tell me if I'm wrong, Jonathan, but ecology has actually looked at our shoreline master program. Because starting on Saturday is the 30-day comment period for the SMP. So if you know anyone who's interested in commenting on the SMP, I have many, many constituents. This is a big, big deal. So I just wanted to mention that. Island Transit has made an offer to an HR person. So see, and so I went in, cleaned out my office. And so I don't have to be their HR anymore. So that was a happy for me. The one of the things that we heard of maybe a month and a half ago, and I'm hoping that it's, you know, with the federal government being what it is, I'm hoping it's still on track, is that NAS Whidbey is going to be opening like a small VA clinic. So we're really excited about that, about having an actual VA clinic here on the island. And the thing that the commissioners are working on mostly these days really is about our comprehensive plan. And the biggest issue we have is, as you all know, we're looking at about 15,000 new residents over the next 20 years. And where do we put these people, or where do we allow housing to encourage those people to have a place to live? Because what's important to us is that we retain the wild places, the forests, the open spaces, the wetlands, and we don't allow those, because those things that are precious to us, the reason why we all live here, right, is because these wonderful attributes that we have. It means that these 15,000 people have to go someplace. We have to make the dense areas more dense.
And the state in this year has said you have to actually plan for people at all income levels. So that we're required to identify where in Oak Harbor, for example, can they put people making less than 50% of the average median income, a whole lot of people making less than average. And so we're having a difficulty, jurisdictions are having a difficult time with this, and we're getting a lot of dialogue about that. And the commissioners had a big meeting with all of the city council members of Oak Harbor right here just a couple of weeks ago to try to kind of work this through. So that's our main area of focus right now, is trying to figure out how we can massage things, zoning and so on, in the jurisdictions in order to accommodate 15,000 new people in Island County over 20 years without negatively impacting those things that are most precious to us here. So I don't have anything else. Does anyone else have anything else? Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that you all came, and we will do better this year. I promise, Greg, we will do better.
Good meeting.
It was nice to see everybody.
It really was.